Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gigabit Nation, Broadband Talk Radio. I'm your host, Craig Settles, and I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today as we provide useful information and insights to help public, private, and nonprofit organizations get more, better broadband everywhere that it needs to be. Today, we're going to touch on a very interesting topic, that of legislation that has been put in place in 19 states so far to limit municipal networks and public networks of any kind, varying degrees of restriction. But in the last year, we have seen opposition raised to a number of these bills that we either introduced for the first time or introduced to make current restrictions even more restrictive, and we've been able to fight back against those. Today I'm broadcasting live from the SOTOA conference, which is here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's been an interesting conference because this morning a number of folks, including one of the legislators from the North Carolina legislature, was very much vocally opposed to the bill, which has been very restrictive here in the state, and is advocating a lot for people to mobilize and advocate and to influence elections and basically turn the tide. Our guest today is broadband attorney, telecom attorney, and a national advocate for communities being allowed to make informed choices regarding their broadband decisions, Jim Ballard. I think a lot of you will probably know Jim and have read his newsletter that he sends out. Jim, welcome to the show.
Craig, thank you for having me. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here.
No worries.
And I thank you for all that you have done over the last several years to help the communities in the various states resist the efforts to curtail their efforts.
Thank you very much, Jim. And it's true. We have worked together for a number of years, and I can honestly say I don't think anyone in the U.S. knows more about the intricacies of how these legislative actions take place and they unfold. There's been an ebb and flow that goes with that, and Jim has pretty much followed this for a number of years. And so I really want to just go into what has been going on and get a sense from you, Jim, about how, what this mean. Are we really seeing a change in how these things are going? Starting with Georgia, I think Georgia was the big battle last year, right, where they introduced legislation then.
Let me pull back for a second and give a broader overview that will put all this into context and will help answer your question as to whether this is a swinging of the pendulum the other way or whatever it is. We've had waves of proposed barriers over the last close to 20 years. Right after the Telecommunications Act of 1996 was enacted, we had the first wave of barriers in 1996, 1997, maybe 8, 9, 10 states looked at barriers at that time. With the benefit of hindsight, I think that we were. With the benefit of hindsight, I think that we were surprised and didn't estimate correctly the potential dangers of those laws.
Mm-hmm.
We had a provision of the Communications Act that we had argued to be in that act that would preempt these barriers. We had a case before the FCC that we thought was going to be decided in our direction. It didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Second wave, in the early 2000s, a new kind of barrier was introduced, one that pretended to be a level playing field, fair competition promoting legislation, but in fact had restrictions that not anyone could meet, public or private, but these were smoke and mirrors laws. And in 2004, the Supreme Court ultimately ruled against municipalities in a matter called Nixon versus Missouri Municipal League.
Mm-hmm.
Later that year, we had an awful Pennsylvania law.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And
remember
the
that
following
one.
Year, 14 states introduced barriers. We beat off, either defeated entirely or watered down almost all of them. And then over the course of the next few years, 2006 to about 2010, we won all the battles in the states.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, we had the election in which the Tea Party won a number of seats in state legislatures and effectively pressed Republicans into being more anti-local government than
mm-hmm.
they had been. And so we saw a new little bump of bills introduced in 2011, 2012, 2013, and now this year. North Carolina, after we'd been successful for 5 years, finally succumbed and passed a bill in 2011. Next came South Carolina in 2012,
mm-hmm.
a couple of other states toughened their laws. And last year, Georgia, I think, was a very important turnaround because not only did Georgia, for the second time, defeat a bill, but it defeated it by a substantial majority on the floor of
mm-hmm.
House of Representatives.
Okay.
Usually the bills are defeated or delayed in or bottled up in committee. This one actually went to the floor. And this year so far, we've stopped the Kansas bill and think that it won't come out of committee. Always remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
A bill that would have restricted the tax incremental financing for municipal telecom projects in Indiana did not pass. In Utah, grassroots individuals stopped a couple of bills that would have had an adverse effect on the Utopia project.
Mm-hmm.
And in Tennessee, after several years of introducing bills to try to remove the territorial restrictions on a number of communities, including Chattanooga, the bill did not pass again, but it won support from new quarters, new kinds of arguments, even by very conservative people who began to ask questions about whether these restrictions are in fact good for
mm-hmm.
the communities involved in the private sector and the nation as a whole. So, do we have a pendulum swinging in the opposite direction? It's probably too soon to say, but it's very gratifying to see that communities everywhere are seeing what's going on with Google Fiber and AT&T announcing it's going to match Google in Austin and go to Dallas itself.
Mm-hmm.
CenturyLink has experimental projects. CSpire is applying the same kind of model as Google in Mississippi. So I think more and more communities are saying, wait a minute, we want Google. Google's not likely to come to us anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we be restricted from partnering with the private sector or, if necessary, providing for our own needs? Aren't we just like we were a century ago when the country was electrifying and the private sector couldn't get to all the communities or didn't want to quickly enough? So history seems to be repeating itself. We'll just have to see over time how far and how fast that will happen.
Right. So now if you look at what happened last year in Georgia, and you look at we'll get to Tennessee in a minute, but if you look at Utah and Kansas, is it correct to say that the level of civic engagement has increased dramatically? I mean, especially when you look at Kansas, because...
Well, certainly civic engagement has always been critically important. That's why we won all those battles.
Mm-hmm.
When you deal with a state legislature in a legislative season, you have to have people in the hallways literally every day. And if the organizations, individuals, private sector entities that want to do business with local governments and all that can get their acts together and support people being at the legislature day in and day out. That's mm-hmm. what you need to do. And that happened in Georgia. It was a very well organized and active campaign there. Obviously, you wouldn't have gotten a victory on the floor mm-hmm. of the legislature without that. Certainly in Kansas this year, under the leadership of Chanute and the Kansas Municipal Utilities and many other allies, that's what it took to bottle up that bill in a very conservative state legislature. And Utah, that was a grassroots opposition that stopped the two bills from mm-hmm. Moving forward. Yes, you're absolutely right. Support of active opponents of these barriers is the critical ingredient in the success of these efforts.
Right. And in fact, you won an award today, you and Chris Mitchell and the Georgia Municipal Association, for your advocacies in that big battle. Was that the second, by the way, was that the second major struggle in the legislature in Georgia?
It was, yes. We were able to derail the Georgia legislation 2 years in a row.
Okay. So now, what was, if you were to give maybe some advice to communities that might face this again, what were some of the things that you observed? I mean, there was an outpouring of support, but how was it coordinated? How was the messaging, executed? And more importantly, maybe, how was the interaction with the legislature? How was that implemented or executed?
Well, first of all, a key element is that you have to have a coalescing of local leadership early on.
Mm-hmm.
There have to be commitments from either the state associations that represent municipalities or municipal utilities, or all of them, the more the better, to mm-hmm. Jump on this issue at the earliest date, to become themselves educated about the risks involved, about what is in the law, what is not readily apparent in the law but can have profound effects. For example, we mentioned earlier that a number of state laws have what they call level playing field or mm-hmm. fair competition provisions. They look on the surface to be positive and
seem logical.
Sure. But in fact, they create tremendous pressures and tremendous burdens, and that is a significant detriment. When there are uncertainties, when there are additional burdens, when there are threats to funding, threats of litigation,
mm-hmm.
Communities are usually conservative, and while they begin to recognize they need the advanced communications infrastructure, they don't want to buy into years of litigation, and so these barriers are effective, and
mm-hmm.
And that's what their intent is. So it's important to understand how the laws work. It's important to have tools that you can use with legislators. Legislators are not full-time state government officials. They have jobs. They come together for 3-4 months. They look at sometimes a couple thousand bills. They don't have the time to explore in depth what you're doing, so you have to help educate them with handouts, with one-pagers, with white papers. You have to respond to the arguments that the carriers have made to them, and you have to get people to get on the phone and call their legislators.
Uh-huh.
You have to have the national media, the folks like Craig Settles, who can come in and trenchantly talk about the situation in ways that non-experts can understand. and all these things have to come together. It is a colossal waste of everybody's time. I wish we didn't have to do it.
Right.
I wish we could just, with a flick of a finger, roll back the 20 or so state laws that have effect of some form of limitation. But I fear that's not going to happen across the board in the immediate future.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of tactics, my introduction to the space, this whole community broadband issue, was when my former hometown, Philadelphia, decided it was going to build a citywide municipal network. Then all of a sudden, Harrisburg, the state capital, came up with legislation to kill that. Now, Philadelphia waged a fairly aggressive, you know, all media involved kind of counterattack. I mean, there was email, there was news, there was, you know, trips to Harrisburg and so forth. And so that was in 2004, I believe. So from 2004 to 2014, have the communities that have been successful, have they been waging the same or using the same kind of tactics? And if so, what are they? Because clearly if they're, you know, if they're consistently winning, we should probably take note of what some of the more effective ones are.
Okay, so in the case of Philadelphia, the key in part was to have the governor be a former mayor of the city.
Did not hurt.
Right, and to carve yourself out of the restriction,
mm-hmm.
Which is what happened. Philadelphia essentially got Verizon to pre-waive its objections.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislation went through, affected everybody else, and Philadelphia was carved out of the effects of the restrictions. I'm not sure that lesson applies anywhere else. It is, as a matter of fact, it is common that when a barrier is proposed, the communities that have already made some form of steps forward will get at least a partial grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
The restrictions generally try to stop their expansion, which is itself a restriction.
Mm-hmm.
So in any event, when there are threats, when there are communities that have gone forward, the advocates of the legislation try to take them out of the argument by making it less offensive to them. Usually doesn't work.
Right.
I don't think that otherwise what happened in Pennsylvania, we had lots of different organizations representing lots of different interests as part of the battle, but as it happens, Verizon carried a lot more strokes with the legislature of Pennsylvania than all the combined other forces.
Right.
And the law went through.
Right. And that is sort of a point there, was that it wasn't necessarily a victory for, well, it wasn't a victory for the state. It was a victory for Philadelphia. And as a result, we learned some interesting things about mobilizing community support and making it, you know, a headline news item and actually getting, you know, the restriction in the first place.
Well, the irony was that the Pennsylvania law was so ugly in its effect, essentially giving the incumbents a right to say no to a community,
mm-hmm.
that it helped us to build a huge nationwide coalition that was in place in 2005 when 14 states proposed barriers. Now, I mentioned earlier that we were able to either defeat outright or water down almost all of those bills.
Mm-hmm.
That may not have been possible, but for what happened in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And a couple of years later, one of Verizon's presidents and I were on a panel. And he said that what happened in Pennsylvania, their victory now, turned out to be, what word did he use? it turned out to be, I'm sorry.
It's not a pirate movie.
No. Maybe I'll remember before the end.
No.
But in any event, a debacle for Verizon. That
okay.
was just work.
Because I know, you know, one of the things I think Verizon seemed hurt. I mean, of all the people that I have, all the incumbents that I have criticized in my time and my blogs and whatnot, Verizon was actually the only company that ever had their PR folks call to talk about, you know, how I position them and their position being, you know, as anti-municipal network.
Well, Verizon for many years now has said that we don't think that on the merits municipal or other public broadband initiatives make sense, but we're not going to oppose them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not its position in Pennsylvania in 2004, but it had evolved to that position by the time that vice president and I were
mm-hmm.
on that panel where
mm-hmm.
he called what had happened before a debacle for
right.
for Verizon.
So they have kind of changed. So let's talk about let's talk about Tennessee, and then we can kind of go back and look at Kansas a little bit more. But so we've had cases where either a new bill was being introduced, though it seems like that kind of activity has lessened, or states already have restrictions or trying to ratchet up the restrictions on them. So then all of a sudden we have Tennessee, and when I say all of a sudden, mainly on the national scene. I think that, you know, you talked about the bill, you know, a bill to kind of roll back restrictions has come up a couple of times, but I think in the national scene in the broadband area, Tennessee is just kind of written up as one more state that has a restriction. Is the constant attempt to dial this back, is this, I don't know, indicative of an increasing amount of legislative rethink? Is there something about the dynamics of, you know, like the Google initiative and some of the national attention? What's driving Tennessee?
Well, I think what's driving Tennessee is the success of Chattanooga, perhaps.
Ah, that could be.
Now, the bill that we're talking about has been introduced in various forms several years now, and it has never passed.
Mm-hmm.
Among the things that the bill does is that it bottles up Chattanooga in its own footprint.
Right.
And prevents it from providing service outside its territory where it has potential customers that are eager to receive its service.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there are other restrictions in the bill, but, you know, that's the one that was the subject
that's
of this
hammer.
Year.
Right.
Yeah. And so there are people in Tennessee who have in the past not been supportive of legislation of this kind, who are questioning whether it really makes sense to hold back the Chattanoogas or prevent other
mm-hmm.
Chattanoogas from stepping forward. Now, we've long argued that people who are libertarian or conservative or even our Tea Party should be our allies. They should be saying that these kinds of projects are proposed by small governments that are accountable to the people for reasons of economic development primarily.
Mm-hmm.
That they're good for the communities, but whether they're good for the communities or not, that's a choice that local people should make for themselves.
Right.
That's not something that some company or some legislature should impose on communities. They should make those choices. They're going to be on the line for what happens, and they should have a right to decide. And for the first time this year, that kind of thinking seems to be winning more support. Not
mm-hmm.
enough support this time around to actually get the bill through in the face of strong opposition from the established carriers. But that's an important dialogue that seems to be moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
I'd certainly like to see that kind of discussion much more broadly held across the country where individuals or others are considering barriers, because it's an important point.
Right.
At the same time, the Federal Communications Commission and the White House and NTIA are all sympathetic or even more toward the ability of communities to make decisions for their own futures. They think that the more advanced communications broadband networks we have, the better it is for our country's global competitiveness and quality of life and education and public safety and healthcare. All of these things benefit from advanced communications networks in the way that everything benefited from being electrified. Mm-hmm. That it's a platform and driver of a lot of progress in a lot of different areas at the same time, and we should not be excluding any potential driver means for getting more of those networks. And we've got an important stake as a global leader in making that happen for America's good. And these also are important points that sometimes are very difficult to squeeze into the dialogue that happens around proposed barriers.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a danger of, because many of the legislatures that have enacted these bills and threatened to, you know, try to bring some more on are fairly conservative, and they are anti-big government and so forth, is there any possibility that having the FCC come out forcefully in favor of removing these restrictions would lead to a, you know, sort of a political partisan digging in of the heels?
Well, that's certainly possible. But I'd say that the alternative is not attractive either. It's one thing to stop a proposed barrier. It's much, much more difficult to undo one that's already mm-hmm. in place. And in the absence of more voices from many different directions saying, you know, we need a better way of proceeding here, I don't see on balance that support from the federal government is a net negative.
Right, because it'll join other voices and they'll be in sync, and so
right.
subsequently you don't have to say, well, we're doing this, and if we do this, we will be kowtowing to Washington, and heaven knows we don't want to do that. So, you know, so it's, yeah, I can see where
right.
the many voices makes a difference.
Right, and you are clearly correct that outright help from the FCC is not welcomed by everyone. Some folks just focus on localism, and they say that, you know, help is as bad as negative things from mm-hmm. the outside.
Mm-hmm.
At the core, the issue is we should have the right to decide our own fate. And in principle, if we say that no one should restrict our right, that ought to be the end of it. And it, you know, we shouldn't have to look for outside help.
Mm-hmm.
But the barriers are in place. More will be introduced. I hope not, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
it seems that history would suggest that there will be more barriers introduced over some years, and I think it's on balance very favorable to have an organization like the FCC and NTIA and the White House and all that expressing from their national perspective what's important for the country
mm-hmm.
to do.
Now, in Tennessee this year, there were actually 8 bills, basically two companion, or what do you call that, companion bill, or two companion bills when you...
A companion bill is typically thought to be the bill on the other side of the legislature. So
right.
if you have a House bill, its companion would be a similar bill on the Senate side,
right.
because in the end, both the House and the Senate have to enact legislation, and then they
reconcile it all.
They reconcile and then it goes to the governor. So sometimes in some legislatures, a bill will go through one house, then get dumped in the second, and they'll consider it. Sometimes bills move up simultaneously in both houses and then ultimately get reconciled.
But is it odd that we have four different bills? There was one specific to a city, one specific to a county, and then the other two were general across the state. One would roll back the, you know, that footprint restriction, and I forget what the fourth one did. But I was always curious during that process if there was some strategy that I was missing in terms of, you know, were they rolling out four to keep the incumbents off guard, or, you know, what was that all about?
I can't speak to what specifically the strategies were behind the four particular bills that were introduced in Tennessee. Let me say, however, that as a general matter, it is not unusual for the members of a legislature that represent certain areas to introduce legislation that favors the particular interests of the businesses or communities that they represent. And so sometimes the issues are of general application. Sometimes they're specific to particular areas. Sometimes there's concern that the general legislation won't pass, so having more narrow legislation might have a better chance of going forward. What exactly happened in Tennessee this year, I can't talk about. I don't know.
Right. And I was kind of late getting to that party because it was, you know, as I mentioned, I mean, I think this rollback effort is probably, is known in Tennessee, but not necessarily known outside of the state. At the time that I heard about it was probably 3 weeks ago, and it was right after the Utah thing went down for the third time, post Kansas, and so you know here's this activity that's going on. The latest that I've heard though is that two of the bills have been tabled, and I don't know what the status of the other two are. So it seems like we have gotten it where it was before, and again because I haven't followed the past years, I don't know if the number. I don't know if the numbers of sponsors is an indication of growing support, because almost all of those bills had three and four co-sponsors.
At the end of the day, it's whether a bill can move or not.
Right.
And my understanding is the ones that would have statewide effect are not going to move this year. And that pretty much means that they're not going to pass.
Right.
And while, as I said, it seems that there were more voices this year than in years past arguing in favor of the bills, in the end, they still aren't going to pass. If there's an effort next year, maybe there'll be more voices, maybe other things will have happened in the interim to make the passage of them more likely than it was this year. That all remains to be seen.
Now, today at the STOA conference, we heard from Representative Brawley and a couple of other folks that were basically saying, in effect, you know, we've got a bad bill. We've got a bill that's standing in the way of progress. And we have a legislature that is actually working against itself because, on one hand, they have enshrined this anti-municipal bill. And on the other hand, they're saying, well, all students have to go to digital learning materials, which pretty much, if you're going to get that stuff online and communicate and collaborate and have study groups, you have to have a fast internet connection because those books are kind of huge and, you know, the graphics and all. And so the sense that I got from his comments was that we have an untenable position and it is up to the people to apply the pressure to get us past all of this. Now, if I look at Tennessee and I look at North Carolina, right, they have similar I think, levels of conservatism in the legislature. They have, I don't know, maybe North Carolina's bill is looked at as being more restrictive than Tennessee. I guess it depends on who you talk to. But is the call to basically rise up that we heard this morning, does that kind of call have potential? You know, is it possible that next year, if there is a, you know, significant uprising in both North Carolina and Tennessee, that we'll get over the hump this time of, you know, rolling back restrictions?
I would hope so, and I agree with the message that if you are opposed to something that your legislature has done, it's your job to communicate your concerns to your representatives, and if your representatives don't agree with you, then you need to think about supporting other candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the legislative process works.
Right.
And clearly, the point that you made earlier came through loud and clear here. What's the argument for removing books from kids if they don't have the connectivity that would enable them to educate themselves in the alternative?
Right.
I mean, that's immoral, among other things. It's ridiculous.
Right.
And these are education issues in the sense, you know, there's certainly education of the kids, but it's also education of the legislators to understand what's at stake.
Why they're being silly.
Yeah. Right. And that's just one example.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about core economic development. We're talking about access to more affordable health care. We're talking about smarter transportation. We're talking about public safety. We're talking about all of these things at the same time. We're talking about a platform that is going to support the growth and evolution and development of so many different areas of our life. To deprive communities, to deprive a state of access to the connectivity that will enable all of that evolution to happen doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a discussion that legislators who have just, you know, accepted what they're told about how communities shouldn't be doing these sorts of things need to hear and need to understand, because it seems to me this is not a conservative versus liberal sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives ought to be at the core supporting these efforts by people who have accessible local governments trying to do what the people want them to do. And if you can't have local communities representing the interests of local constituencies in a world where we're dealing with larger and larger and more inaccessible major organizations,
mm-hmm.
what does conservatism really mean?
Very true. Very true. Now, one of the things I observed about last year's battle in Georgia, mm-hmm. was that the broadband advocates appeared to have rallied a lot of business interests. They rallied chambers of commerce. They rallied individual businesses. They had those networks in place that were creating and producing economic development results at the foreground, right? So economic development was a large lever.
Mm-hmm.
In the next round, you know, call it, you know, the 2015 round, Could education become as viable a lever as economic development?
Well, it is already an important lever, but in the 20 years that I've been involved in this, economic development is always the number one issue for local governments. In every campaign, in every initiative, economic development is the top three considerations that drive these projects to move forward. That should be something that's apolitical. It should be something that crosses all of the potential divide, because mm-hmm. everybody agrees that that economic development is a good thing for communities and individuals and so on and so forth. They may disagree on what exactly economic development means,
right,
and whether economic development as measured by a successful company is what you're looking for, or mm-hmm. whether economic development should result in meaningful work for your population, and they're not always the same thing.
Right.
But economic development, I predict, will not ever become the number two consideration.
Okay.
Just based on history, it will continue to be the main driver, but other things will also increasingly be factors that legislators and others understand to be in play.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to rally the population, are they equal, or is it, do you think that you can motivate more people by an argument of education, either equal to or maybe even greater than economic development? And by the way, one thing to think about was you and I believe with Chris, we were on that sort of that panel radio show where we had the representative from Arkansas, and she was very forceful about the education issue, and she was able to get a lot of support for that.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering.
I by emphasizing economic development, I don't mean at all to denigrate the importance of education.
Oh no, not definitely not.
It is absolutely an important consideration. To some people, it appeals to them even more than economic development. I'm just saying that based on 20 years of experience, economic development has always been the large elephant
right.
in the discussion, and I think that it will continue to be. But education is unquestionably an important consideration, and it will also be an important debating point.
Right.
I'd put education and economic development out there as the top two,
right?
By far,
bar none.
Right.
It's just if I were advocating to a group, an audience, of folks who are facing, taking on this challenge next year, next session, that they look at, say, maybe education as equal when they're trying to rally the general population. Right, because I see when you're leading the charge in this effort, you've got two groups to consider. You've got to consider getting your populace to rise up,
mm-hmm.
to at least intimate that, we put you in office and we can take you out of office, which having, a couple of thousand people show up and write letters and call, that conveys that, right? But you got to get those people to have that fervor. And then when you are talking to legislators, economic development, bar none, is their key concern. They see that as, vital to their constituents' existence. I'm just saying you sort of have not a divided message, but you focus on one with one audience because you want to rally them. And then you have the other folks who decide.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that at all. It's a different discussion, however, because
mm-hmm.
you can support education without necessarily being against or for a state barrier on other kinds of things. You
right.
You can, for example, separate and wire up schools, okay?
Right.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that if you carve out education, you can say, okay, I've dealt with the education issue. Now let's get back to barring these networks. Okay.
Right.
So we have programs that are intended to provide state and federal funding for schools. Schools are hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
As a part of Connect Ed. And, there have been a couple billion more funds that are going to be directed to wiring up, not just wiring up schools, but also helping to provide computers and other kinds of facilities
mm-hmm.
once the connectivity gets there. So education certainly is going to be an important issue, but the arguments are slightly different.
Right, right. And talking about, raising up the masses in righteous indignation, Kansas City was, I think, impressive for both the intensity and the swiftness with which they were able to mobilize.
Because
I remember
the state of Kansas.
Sorry, because you called me on Tuesday and I called Chanute on Wednesday, and there was like, you know, there was still a bit of shock the fact that this had all like dropped out on Monday, and people had no idea that it was coming, and there was like a certain sense of doom and gloom in that phone conversation. But by Thursday and Friday, it was like all cylinders were firing, and it was, you know, it was like you had unleashed a seventh cavalry. Is that, you know, rare? Is that, can that be replicated? You know, how do you read the Kansas situation?
Well, again, I wasn't on your call with Chanute. I think we weren't, in fact, surprised, but I think they were nevertheless deeply disappointed in seeing the bill actually
appear and take
actually,
form.
Right, and hope springs eternal that, you know, the bill wouldn't have gotten wouldn't have gotten introduced, but it happened, and they probably caught them at a down moment.
Right.
That passed very quickly, and we all got very, very active, very, very quickly.
And that's my point, was that there was this, it was sudden, it was incredibly swift, and now, you know, compared to Georgia, was it, you know, a faster reaction? Because I don't know if Georgia had been sort of mobilizing for a while before they turned the public part of that campaign loose. But I didn't know that from the Kansas perspective, it was, you know, within a week we're basically mm-hmm. up and running and breathing fire.
I can't really compare the two because both seem to me to rally very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once the bill was there and it was something we could point to and say, here it is, now we got to react.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you and I can say over and over again that there might be a bill next year and you ought to get ready for it, but it's difficult to get local governments that have limited budgets and limited
mm-hmm.
time and limited priorities to gear up unless and until it's right there and it's actually going to happen.
Right.
Fortunately, we have we've been through enough of these campaigns that we know what has to happen pretty quickly.
Right.
And you know, once a bill is introduced, we know within reason what it's likely to say and what it means and so on and so forth. In Kansas, we didn't have to this year do much creative reading because it was the most...
It was pretty blunt.
It was the most in-your-face, get-out-of-my-life kind of bill that I've seen in many, many years.
And, true. It was pretty... I think, you know, again, for, you know, from the audience perspective, those who listened... In fact, the show on Kansas and that whole was one of the more listened-to shows this year for me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And people really cued in on that pretty quickly, you know, I have to say. It's interesting to me, you know, because in about an hour or so, I'm going to go in and talk to the folks here about how do you prepare for the politics of this thing. And one of the things that to me has been a common thread throughout all of the successes, and even in North Carolina, where eventually, you know, the incumbent side won.
Well, we won for 4 years.
That's what I'm saying. Right. There were several rounds of successes. And in those North Carolina successes and other successes, the ability to mobilize people, get them out the door when legislators were doing things like changing meeting times and days and changing locations and whatnot. You know, Wilson, not Wilson itself, but the whole state of North Carolina was a marvel to behold. I mean, I sort of look at this as sort of the political tactician kind of thing. You know, your ability, you know, as a state or a bunch of state advocates to mobilize a population on what is not an easy to understand concept. I mean, broadband, why am I going to drive to state capitals to, like, talk to a legislator I've never talked to before? You know, you know, what the thread seemed to be, there were folks, there was a core of folks able to mobilize the population and get them out the door.
Well, to return to North Carolina in 2011, what marks the big difference between what happened that year and what had happened in prior years was that at the time that the bills were introduced in the prior years, there was still the possibility of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would put together our letter that included Google and Alcatel-Lucent and the national organizations, and that would cause people to step back and say, well, let's talk about this. Maybe there's something here that we're not considering. In 2011, our sense was that it was over before it began.
Because they were not willing at all to be flexible.
You could not have any discussion. They didn't want to hear it. They had their numbers. It was going to happen, and our only strategy that we were effectively limited to was trying to make the best of the grandfather provisions for the mm-hmm. networks that had already gotten started. There was room for some discussion on those issues, but there was no room for discussion on whether the bill with its restrictions was going to pass or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate. As you know, in South Carolina, we won the first year. Second year, we should have won that too, because we got to the very last day of the session. The legislature closed at 5:00. That should have been the end of the bill and the mm-hmm. end of a concern, at least for another year, but the person who had control of the clock extended the time by a few minutes.
Harshness.
Called for a vote, and after the session was over, or what it was scheduled to be, there was a vote on the legislation, and it passed something like 5:05 p.m.
Oh, my. That's a little harsh. I mean,
the legislation's harsh, and the impact on communities, as you heard today, Harold Young of Orangeburg County. I mean, this is a county of persistent poverty
mm-hmm.
that wanted to use advanced communications to lift themselves out of that to the extent that they could, and then to be confronted with a legislation that would have prevented them from doing it, but for the fact that we were able to also carve out some portions of their county. It is harsh. It's very harsh. These laws are stupid. You know, they ought not to exist. They ought to be rolled back. And it's hard to do, but they ought to be rolled back or preempted, one mm-hmm. thing or another.
And I would, I would make the argument that with the prevalence of the issue, the news, the Google, the Macquarie's, all of this momentum toward broadband, and high speed and gigabit city, that I would think that after a certain point, unless you are just totally, clueless, or as you relate to your constituents, how often can a legislator return home and meet their constituents saying, why should only Chattanooga? Why should only this county, Clarksville, I believe it is, why should they be the only ones having broadband? And as I listened, or as I read Senator Bowling's comments in Tennessee, she being one of the senators that sponsored one of the four bills, right? Her line of rational thought and response to the Tea Party, in response to the incumbents, was that this is a community issue. This is not about, level playing field and all the rest of that. It's like, isn't there a certain point at which that it becomes inevitable this thing turns back because there's just so much pressure on communities wanting to have this?
You would think that would be the answer, but the question is when that would happen.
Mm.
You know, the incumbent carriers are basically saying, we don't want to do certain areas. It's not economic for us, but we don't want those communities doing it themselves either in a way that would work.
Right.
I recently gave an NPR interview, and as the interviewer put it, they're basically saying, we don't want it. We don't want our cake, and we don't want to eat it either.
And on top of that, we don't want you to have a piece of the cake as well. We're going to all starve. We're going to all go without dessert together.
Yeah. Well, that's immoral, you know. And how long can that continue while the trends with Google building out cities and ceasefire and others building out cities, how long can you tell areas of the country that it's okay for you to be left behind?
Right.
It's okay for your kids not to have the benefit of the best education that others are getting elsewhere. It's okay for you not to have, advanced transportation systems. That's wrong. And the question is, at what point do the legislators say, enough of this, I'm not enacting new barriers, or I'm not willing to continue to see barriers sitting on the book. To bring us back to the opening questions you asked, I would sincerely love to be able to look back on this year as being the watershed year where the pendulum swung permanently against barriers.
Right.
But it's, we'll know that in retrospect, and it's hard to tell where we are at
right.
any one point.
Right. Because I would look at, and this is probably going to be our closing comments, but, I look at Kansas City and...
you mean Kansas State?
I'm sorry.
anybody, since we're in the communications business, anytime someone says Kansas City these days, they immediately think about Google Fiber
right.
in Kansas City.
Exactly.
So you got to be clear. You got to be clear that you're talking about Kansas
right.
State.
Right. So the state of Kansas, right?
All right.
This represented to me a smackdown that caught the legislature by surprise. I mean, at least based on the comments I heard, both informal off-the-record comments and comments made in the media, that these folks weren't expecting this kind of thing. I mean, you look at all the other states, Georgia, North Carolina, they have been through it. They had to run it 3 or 4 times, so they kind of got used to what the pushback was going to be. And so here comes Kansas, the state of, saying, okay, here, this is going to be, draconian, and it's going to be complete. And we're going to let our lobbyists write the bill, for crying out loud, and because their rules will allow that kind of procedural thing to happen. And poof, here it is. And then all of a sudden they were just embarrassed. I mean, that's how I looked at it in their comments.
Well, I think there's something to that. If you look at the website of this bill, you see there's no sponsor.
Right.
No one stepped up to own this bill. And it became clear afterwards that it was drafted by the Cable Association.
Right.
Kansas Cable and Telecommunications Association. And that it is quite possible that the first time some of the key members of the Senate, where the bill was ultimately somehow introduced, the first inkling they had that there even was such a bill was when the tsunami of opposition to it.
Oh, the calls! Oh, the agony! And it was pretty swift. It was,
mm-hmm.
And I will touch on this in the in the session I'm going to do in a little bit here. This, I think, is one of those things that goes 50-50, right? So there is a certain feeling that you don't name names and you don't personalize it, right? And I will agree. You should not trash talk people. You should not call into account their lineage, their parentage, or their dog, right? But at the same time, I feel that part of you know, the reason why this thing was effective, and even those first, you know, North Carolina battles were effective, was that people were naming names, that people were at a national level putting names out there. You are the one who sponsored this bill. You, it is your committee. You guys voted this way by name. And, oh, by the way, you know, here comes Stop the Cap with you took this much money and you took this much money. Now, yeah, and Bill never says, you know, they voted because they got the money. But he basically drew the line and put it out there in the spotlight, dudes, you guys are taking this money and you're supporting this realm of legislation. I personally, now this is the radical in me, feels like shining the light on this kind of nonsense has value. I believe that some of the local folks may want to tread carefully on that because they've got to, you know, live with hopefully a, you know, a compromise. They got to deal with these people in the following years, right? So you don't want to like totally mess up your yard. But at the same time, you get into one of these situations, you got to play to win. And I don't think shining the light on specific people is a bad thing. But am I wrong? Am I the Berkeley liberal?
Well, you know, at the core of the argument for localism is that the local officials who support the project are going to own the credit or own the blame.
Yep.
It's accountability, and you ought to be accountable for the state legislation that you are backing so the voters can determine whether they agree with you, and if they don't agree with you, that they ought to be able to say, this is the reason why, or this is among the reasons why they are opposed to your continuing to occupy your seat in the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes our very point that accountability is at the core of all of this, and it ought to be at the state legislative level as much an issue as it is locally. How accountable is the major carrier to your community? Certainly, how accountable are they to you because they advance state legislation? They're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, and that's one of the core things that communities feel is wrong. They want advanced communications network. They can't get it. They almost always ask the incumbents for it first before they move on.
Exactly.
Right. And so you've touched on one of the core issues for representatives and citizens of local communities.
Right. And so, you know, don't make it personal. Don't necessarily make it partisan, because at the local level, generally, it is not partisan at the local level. But on the flip side, as a tactic to get progress, it's good to shine some light on some folks because they hate to have light shine on. I mean, they just do. I mean, the person who headed the committee in Kansas was fairly livid at the fact that her name was now a national whipping post, you know, for everything that's wrong about bad muni broadband bills. I feel bad. I'm not sure how well she thought this out or really thought about the implications. But on the flip side, you know, her committee was about to screw over a bunch of small communities in their state, and those are the people that elected them.
Well, and the city of Chanute, this came out through a statewide petition that had circulated,
mm-hmm.
directed to her, and the city of Chanute apologized if she took that as personal. It wasn't,
right.
wasn't intended to be. It was directed at her committee, which was considering the bill, and she's the chair of the committee.
Right.
So she took it as a personal affront, but that's not how the city of Chanute intended it.
Right. And I just think that, you know, it works sometimes. Jim, this has been a pleasure. Thank you very, very much for being with us today.
Thank you again for the opportunity, Craig.
No worries. Take care. And to our audience, thank you very much for listening again. And we'll be back next week with more good, interesting stuff here on broadband. Take care. Have a nice day.